So thanks for joining us on this another episode of the Big Picture Podcast. I have here the one and only person to have come on the podcast three times, Nermin Amin. She was previously on the podcast in March of 2022 and then January of 2023 and now December of 2023. We've known each other for a while. She's my wife's good friend. And I'll just allow her to introduce herself for our new listeners. Go ahead, please.
So as you said, my name's Nermin. I'm from Egypt. And I live in Florida. And I work in cancer research.
Nice. Thank you so much. So for today, we're going to be talking about the ongoing war, Israel and Hamas, and the impact on the people of Gaza, the impact on Palestinians overall, the social media angle to the war, and just the overall impact on people's lives, regular people, the overall impact to their day-to-day life. So to start with, mention you're from Egypt. How has all of this played out back home in Egypt? I'm sure you're in constant communication with your friends and family over there. And for those who are not familiar with geography, Egypt is in Africa. It's actually in the northeastern part of Africa. And that means it's very, very close to where the war is going on now. Gaza, Palestine, Egypt, the Sinai Peninsula, and so on. So all of that makes Egyptians very, very close to the conflict, to the war. So having said that, can you tell us how all of this is affecting your family members, your extended family members, your friends over there in Egypt right now?
Yeah, sure. So basically, the border that's in Egypt that's like right next to Palestine is called Rafah. And it's kind of far from like where my family lives. Like all of my family lives in Cairo for the most part, so they're not really directly affected by it. But they're obviously emotionally affected by it, and like they've been seeing this conflict happen for like over 70 years. And the issue with Egypt is everybody's disappointed because most of our leaders have been slacking in terms of helping out Palestinians. Like every now and then they would open the borders. But then like nowadays, especially with like this whole like, you know, Israel and Hamas thing, like they have not been as cooperative. So like from my family side, like they just feel like they're helpless, you know, like they can't do anything. Like all they could do is just go to the Rafah border and protest and like try to like convince people to like help open the borders. But there's only so much you can do, you know?
Yeah. And you mentioned the Rafah border. And for those who don't know it as well, that side of Gaza, that is actually the only border crossing. Am I correct?
Yeah. Yeah. It's the only one.
So if that has been closed, then the much needed assistance to regular people, medicine, food, things to help day-to-day lives, that is definitely not being transported into Gaza. So what exactly are they supposed to do? And that just makes this whole thing even worse. And you mentioned how in Egypt, the politicians are not exactly doing much. Is there any particular reason, or is just politicians playing politics, or is there any other reason for just watching from a distance?
I don't know. We've gone through so many in the past, like three decades. But for our current president, he did open the borders a few times. But then as of late, like he's been kind of against it. And we don't really know what his motives are or why he's doing that. I think he's just trying to, like, he's trying to basically stay, not neutral, but, like, this is my opinion. I don't know how he feels. I don't know why he's making these decisions. But I think he's trying to, like, stay as an ally with Israel, because Egypt technically is an ally of Israel. Ever since, the whole Camp David three presidents ago, basically. So I don't know, like he would open the borders like in extreme cases to like let injured people in. And there were a few times where they did try to send aid through Egypt. And I don't think any of it has reached them. So, like, I don't know what his reasoning is. I don't know if it's because he thinks that, like, Israel is going to get in the way of the aid reaching the Palestinians, and so there's no point. Or if he thinks it's useless in the sense where he doesn't want, he doesn't think that, like, it would help the Palestinians in the sense where, like, you know, most people are saying, oh, like, if they flee from Palestine to Egypt, then basically they're letting Israel win. And they're doing exactly what they want them to do. They want to have another Nakba, which is basically, like, the same event that happened in 1948, where they all had to flee to different countries because they were basically kicking them out.
Right.
So it's hard to know what his motive is, to be honest, but he hasn't been as cooperative and helpful as people want him to be, and people have been protesting at the Rafah border.
Right. And to kind of provide some understanding, from my own point of view, I'm from Nigeria, and Nigeria has had its own share of regional conflict and civil conflict and so on. So in the southwestern part of Nigeria where I come from, there was this two small tribes, small in terms of Nigerian sizes. Nigeria is made up of about 300 different tribes. So a country of, I want to say, 300 million people, maybe not that much. But anyway, the tribes that I'm talking about are relatively small. So the latest conflict was between 1997 and 2000, between the Ife people and the Modakeke people. And that was actually where we lived. And we're actually younger then. I think I was between either 9 or 10 years old. And this happened where we saw our friends in school. They had to move because they were living where the conflict was going on. And they had to move to a different part of town and make sure we get home before 7 p.m. Nobody's going out because that's when the curfew starts. That's when the actual fighting begins, and they fight all night. And sometimes you see tracers, bullets flying in the sky at night, and they leave trails. And it was just scary. So this is something I've sadly witnessed from way back. So I understand the difficulties involved with conflicts like this. And this is something like that, but on a much larger scale, because I cannot definitely compare that with what's going on right now in Gaza. So having said all of that, now compared to 23 years ago, there is a totally different element of wars and conflicts. There is a brand new online element. And with that being said, a regular person who has no business with Israel or Gaza or Palestine, and they go online to look for information on what's going on. And I can guarantee you, nobody fully understands whose side to be on. Some people would say this is something that has been happening. You mentioned 20 years ago. Some people think this was something that just happened within the past 3 months, October 7th to now. Some people would say it's been happening since the 1800s. So from your perspective, online narratives, how much impact has it had on this ongoing conflict?
Well, that is a very loaded question. But honestly, so there's both positive and negative impacts of it. Positive is that it's been raising a lot more awareness on what's happening in Palestine, because in the past, like, all the only source of media you had was the news outlets, and they would always be biased. They would always, like, you know, spread propaganda. In fact, they're still doing it, and I can, like, mention an example later. But at least now you have, like, TikTok, you have Instagram, you have other platforms where people are actually posting live reels of what's actually going on in Palestine, like, but as opposed to, like, you know, TV and stuff like that. So, like, you actually get firsthand experiences from the Palestinians themselves showing the atrocity they're dealing with. So I feel like in that sense, like, it has a positive impact because people are more aware of what's going on, and, like, people are getting better education on the matter than before. But then on the negative side of things, there's also propaganda on the other side that's going on. Like, things like pro-Israelis posting videos of people talking in Arabic and them wrongfully translating it, thinking, or, like, in the subtitles, like, putting completely different subtitles than what the person's actually saying to kind of, wow, like, fit the narrative. Assuming that there aren't any Arabic speakers that are going to come across these videos.
Yeah.
Huh. So yeah, like honestly, it's I think overall it's been more beneficial. But it's also been causing a lot more issues between, like, you know, Palestinians and pro Palestinians and pro Israelis.
Yeah, yeah. And from my own line of work, threat intelligence, I see a lot of that, not even regarding this ongoing war, just maybe figuring out on the dark web, someone trying to defraud customers of a particular company, and they go online saying, if you go to this particular store and you buy this particular product, then you're more likely to get this returns, basically return fraud. And all of that is demonstrably false. But because they are trying to scam the people that go on that dark web forum to make money off of them, those ones don't know any better because they have nothing to compare. Okay, if this gift card is from this particular 7-Eleven, then I can use it and then return it and something crazily funny like that. So at that level of committing fraud, I know and I see how online disinformation can be manipulated and then used for something as basic as fraud. Now we have an ongoing war. People would post videos and, like you said, use the wrong subtitles, use the wrong closed captioning to generate anger because they've thought maybe everything they see online is true, which definitely not. And like I said earlier, people would watch a video, pro-Israel video, and say, okay, Israel is doing the right thing. And then they watch another video, pro-Palestine video, and then they say, oh, these Palestinians are actually doing the right thing. Israel is doing the wrong thing. So who do we believe in all of this? It's actually a major problem now, and I actually don't know how any of this can be resolved with online disinformation, online narratives. So having said all of these long sentences I'm using, how much impact do you think fact-checking would cause? And do people actually have time to go fact-checking? Because I know I don't have time to do fact-checking, and I should do fact-checking considering what I do for work. So what do you think about fact-checking, and is it even advisable?
I don't know how that would work because, like, I feel like nowadays, like, especially on Facebook and Instagram, like, they've been very biased in terms of, like, allowing what can be posted and what can't be posted. Like, for example, like, my mom has been she said that she's been posting a lot of pro-Palestine stuff on her Facebook, and then every now and then she gets a notification saying that her post has been removed. Just like that, for no reason. Like, it would be something like, Free Palestine, or, oh, like, there's this many victims, or whatever, like, stuff like that, and it gets deleted. I'm like, fact-checking could help if you actually choose the right people for it.
Yeah.
Because if they fall into the wrong hands, then they have control and they might filter out stuff that they don't want people to see, like they're already doing without even fact checking. But things, you know, mistranslating a language, I'm like, I don't think it's worth fact checking because, like, there are native Arabic speakers that can literally tell everybody. Like, I don't know if I told you about that one. I think I did, about CNN. Where basically the IDF went into, like, a supposed Hamas headquarters or whatever, yeah. And they were pointing at a calendar written in Arabic. And first of all, they're reading it from left to right. Arabic is read from right to left.
Right to left, yeah.
Then they were like, oh, these are all the names of all the Hamas militants, and these are all their shifts. And you look at the calendar, and it literally just has the names of the days of the week.
Wow.
Wow. I'm like, they're so, like, forgive me for saying this, but they're so stupid that, like, you don't even need a fact check crap like that because there are people out here that can easily tell you. You know right. What I mean? Like, they're being so exposed right now that, like, it's just, like, unless you're dumb, like, you know what I mean? Like, you can't believe that stuff.
Yeah, I think similar to the scams we see online and the phishing emails where this thing is written in bad grammar. they are capitalizing the wrong things. They're deliberately is not even the right word, but you see an email and it's telling you, you have a fortune that your great-grandfather buried in your village and you are the rightful heir and they've tracked you down to the U.S. So now it's time for you to claim your rightful inheritance. But for some reason, there are people that would fall for that email. So maybe those emails were crafted to weed out the dumb people, the stupid people, and then they fall for it and then they take all their money. In the same way, this false information, these fake videos about a calendar written in Arabic, maybe the audience is actually the kind of people that would believe that kind of video without talking, without pausing to figure out, okay, if this thing is in Arabic, wouldn't I want to know what is written on it before taking this person's word for it? Because there are languages I can speak, there are languages I don't speak. If someone is telling me something in a foreign language, there are tools that I can use to even get the translation. I can point to my phone camera and it will do that fancy translation thing for me. Almost every app on the App Store can do that now. So maybe all of that is just to say that these people making these videos, they know that there are ways to double check this information, but the audience is not the people that would double check the information. The audience is the people that would read a headline and forward that message before even reading what the article says, before even trying to understand, what am I seeing on this video? Are these actually the names of Hamas militants? What am I reading in Arabic? And then they realize, oh, this is just a calendar showing days of the week. Oh my God, I'm so stupid.
I feel like a lot of pro-Israelis would share that kind of stuff. And I swear to God, like there was this one lady, she posted a video of a Palestinian woman and she was obviously yelling in Arabic and she was basically saying like the Israelis are killing us and they're killing our children and stuff like that. And she was saying that like, it was so hard for her to find her son, and the only way she was able to recognize him was like through his belt or something like that. I don't know if it's because she like found his corpse. Like it wasn't that clear. But in the subtitles, basically they were saying, oh, Hamas is killing us. And a pro-Israeli chick like posted that with the subtitles completely wrong. And I'm like you said, like nowadays people could fact check this, but like if you're pro-Israeli and you want to find something like that you consider as evidence, then you'll just blindly post that or send it to people like, see, this is exactly what's happening. But joke's on you. Like at some point it will come across somebody who does know how to speak Arabic and they'll put you in your place. All the comments on that video, everybody was like, ma'am, who translated this video for you? Like, where'd you get the translation from? Do you even speak Arabic? Like, are you aware of the fact that there are Arabic speakers on TikTok that can easily, you know, translate it for you? So it's and like, I know it's even more difficult, like when people just, for people that like, let's say just solely rely on the news or the news outlets for their source of information. If they saw that IDF thing, then they're going to believe it and they're going to take it as their truth. And they're going to be like, oh, like Hamas militants and all that crap. And that they're going to, because like the whole basis behind that was to support their decision to like bomb that hospital or whatever. Right. So they're just going to bomb the hospital, regardless of who's in it. So there are people that blindly follow these things. But at that point, like, it doesn't matter, because like, even if you fact check stuff for them, like, they're so like set in their ways that even if logic or reason with them, they're not going to listen to you. Even if you disprove everything that they show you, they're just going to keep arguing.
Right. I actually have family members who do this. The most recent example, of course, COVID, and everybody sending all the research-based facts and whatever it is they found online saying, this is the latest information on COVID and how it's spreading. And I would reply them, all of this happens in WhatsApp groups. So I would reply saying, I may not know anything about this particular topic, but I'm willing to put in the time to do additional research and try to figure out more information so that I'm making an informed decision. Because just like I approach everything else, if I want to buy something, okay, I'm doing research on the best place to buy it, the best way to buy this and save as much money as I can. So if I'm doing that for thing of $2, how much more information that I'm going to be consuming, that would definitely make a big impact on my life, on my family's life, and so on. So all of this to now pivot into the fact that this disinformation is affecting individuals, and also it's affecting organizations. There are companies that do business in that part of the world where this war is going on, and they've been, some of them have had to shut down operations, some of them have had to make some dull decisions, which is now leading to the fact that there are companies being boycotted. Before we started recording, you sent a link to me. It's basically a website showing all the companies that are supporting Israel. Mm-hmm. And by extension, making people's lives difficult. So there's tons of companies on that website, and it keeps getting updated almost daily. So I can't imagine what the CEOs are thinking. I can't imagine what's going on in those board of directors meetings or whatever it is they do. But there are people that their livelihood depends on these companies' products. These companies made certain decisions, either in the past or recently, that is making them face these boycotts. If you were a CEO of a company and you do business internationally, how would you address the decision that your company will take regarding this ongoing war to make sure that you don't have to deal with this headache at 2 a.m. in the morning?
CEO, and they decided that they wanted to, like, basically start a business with Israel or something.
Yeah. Considering your background, your moral values, your just everything we've discussed so far, and your human angle, how would you weigh profitability with basic, regular, daily lives of people being impacted by war?
It depends on what role they take in the genocide. If they're clearly, you know, supporting Israel directly and they're offering them funds, then they're aiding them to, like, you know, continue this genocide. Anyone who gives any money to Israel, in my opinion, is contributing to genocide. I don't care what their intentions are, because Israel is an apartheid state. And it has been for over 70 years. Like, it's not, it shouldn't even be a country. Huh. Like, it shouldn't even be a state right now. And the fact that you're even, you know, like, starting a business with them, or, like, making whatever, like, if you're supporting them, then you're supporting genocide. Point blank.
Yeah, the statement you made, I believe some Israelis in Israel actually use that same phrase, an apartheid state. And to the extent where it was at a point, it was even fracturing Israeli society, left wing versus right wing. And I think the current prime minister, Netanyahu, is more to the right wing. It was fracturing the society because the younger folks are more left wing, the older folks are more right wing, and they have strong feelings on how to assimilate Palestinian Arabs versus Israeli Arabs. Is there anything of that nature? Clearly, I'm not as familiar with that part of the world, but the phrase apartheid state, basically saying we support people of this particular skin color or tribe or ethnicity over others, same thing that happened in South Africa years ago, and of course in different parts of Africa and African countries, and even some parts of the West. So talking about Israel's actions and inactions, how do you foresee this war ending? Will it ever end? Is it going to lead to some agreements? Or how exactly, in your opinion, do you think all of this is going to play out?
Honestly, I'm trying to think about it in an optimistic way, even though, like, given the circumstances, like, I'll tell you what my biggest fear is. My biggest fear is that they will succeed at what they want to do, which is basically to ethnically cleanse all of Palestine, which is very obvious. That's what they've been doing. But I'm optimistic because, you know, more people are seeing the truth. And they're advocating for them. More people are taking action in terms of, like, boycotting all the big companies that are directly contributing to this genocide. But my issue is, like, I'm trying to be optimistic in that sense. But at the same time, like, everybody that is aware of this and everybody who's, like, supporting Palestine and advocating for it, there's only so much they could do. Like, they don't have that much power or say in terms of, like, how, like, let's say the U.S. is aiding Israel or how, you know what I mean? Like, because, like, all Israel is like, Israel wouldn't be what it is today had it not been for all the aid and support that was getting from all these different countries. I honestly don't know how it's going to play out. I'm trying to be optimistic and say that maybe because there's more truth, like more people are saying the truth, you know, eventually our voices will be heard and eventually we'll come to a solution. But honestly, knowing how Palestinians are, a two-state solution is not the solution they want. Like, they want their own state back. So even if that takes like 10 more years or 20 more years for them to get there, they're not going to stop fighting. They're not going to stop like advocating for that.
Yeah. And like I said, I don't really know much about the whole history and everything. I've been listening to different podcasts, one particular podcast where this guy dived deep into the whole history, and it's about 25 hours long. And I've been trying to read different things online, just to get a balanced view. I look for people who seem by unbiased. Of course, nobody can be 100% unbiased, but everything I've learned so far, the 25-hour long podcast and different interviews from different people, one of the people you follow on social media, I think, is an imam. He's based in New York.
Omar Suleiman?
Yes, yes. I've listened to his different interviews on different podcasts, NPR and so on. And just to get a balanced view of the whole story. And I still don't know where I position myself, simply because I'm an African from Nigeria in the US. I know Palestinians. I know Israelis. I know people like you. And I'm still trying to learn as much as I can. I'm against the killing of innocent people. When all of this happened, I told Toby, my wife, that regardless of who is at fault or who is not at fault, civilians shouldn't be caught in the middle of a war. That's just basic human, whatever adjective you want to use. So that's at least that's where I am coming from. So Israeli, Palestinian, I'm still learning as much as I can learn. I'm not the person to even comment on how this would play out. I'm against human suffering. I'm against people being denied basic amenities, food, clothing, shelter, medicine. There are babies being born into this war. That shouldn't happen in 2023.
Or even born.
Yeah.
Incubator.
Yeah. Wow.
But to be honest with you, like, I'm not saying this to you specifically, but I do get, like, kind of hurt when people say that when basically they take a neutral, not a neutral, okay, I know that's not what you said, but that is what pisses me off. If they go with a neutral stance, or if they say, oh, like, you know, I can't choose a side because I don't know much about it, or I don't feel like I have the right to say anything because I'm not directly involved in it. If you don't speak up, and if you don't like, it's not even like, it's going to sound biased, but it's like very clear cut as to whose fault all of this is, because this has been an ongoing
issue. Like, this isn't something that just happened overnight. This isn't something that just started, you know, October 7th. This has been an ongoing thing since 1948. Or as you said, some people say it even dated back before then, but 1948 was basically one of the biggest, like, events. To me, I'm like, okay, if you don't choose a side and you're not advocating for anybody, then you're not really doing much for either side. So whether you're pros or other passing, or if you're stuck in between, like, if you're not choosing a side, then there's fewer voices right. to, like, these people. And I get it. Like, people are saying, like, there are people that are like, oh, you know, I'm against civilians being killed. I'm against anybody, like, any innocent lives being killed on either side. But at the same time, I'm still not taking a side. You know, Israel just gets away with everything that it's doing. You're not advocating for one person, like, one side. You're not advocating for the other. But, like, if you have fewer voices advocating for Palestine, then, you know, Israel's get more support by default. Does that make sense? I don't know how to phrase it.
Yeah, I get what you mean. I get what you mean. It's basically saying if you're sad, then you're causing more problems.
You might remember it when I say it, but it's like anyone who stays silent in injustice becomes an oppressor or something like that.
Yeah, and that applies to basically any form of oppression. We've seen race, class, gender, just filling the gaps. Like I said, I'm from Nigeria. I've witnessed firsthand conflicts and wars and all kinds of societal injustices. So it's something I'm sadly familiar with. And like I said earlier, this one is on a much bigger scale, like a million times bigger scale than what I experienced 20, 25 years ago in Nigeria. And it seems complicated, but at the same time, I believe there are people in power who can make all of this stop. But for some reason, maybe even beyond their control, maybe it's all these governments, organizations, or multinational companies building weapons and selling weapons that are making the thing keep going on and on. That's another topic for another day. But at a human level, we shouldn't have to deal with babies suffering and civilians, innocent civilians, suffering all of this genocide, for a much clearer word. Episodes like this is going to keep spreading the message saying enough is enough. We need more action. So I guess in my own way, as unbiased as I am, I'm making this episode to, you know, show some support. Any final words or...
Honestly, the way to sum all this up is for me to suggest people to watch the Bassem Youssef interview with Piers Morgan. That interview, the first one, not the second one, when you watch it, like, he breaks everything down and he makes so many good points. And I feel like that video, it's about like half an hour, I think, but he sums it up so well. And it's just... it's like eye-opening for people that I've seen so many people that were pro-Israel after watching that. They finally saw the truth. And honestly, TikTok's also been playing a role in that. I mean, obviously there's both sides, but especially on TikTok lives, don't get me started on that crap. The amount of times, like, my blood. But like, they would have debates and stuff like that. And like, that would actually help. I've seen people, I was born and raised like a Zionist basically, and thanks to TikTok, like, I've gotten more information on the matter, and, you know, I'm more educated on the matter, and now I'm like pro-Palestinian. So I just wanted to say that, like, social media has been helping out a lot in this case, in terms of like I don't think there's ever been this many protests for Palestine ever since the conflict, right. And I 100% believe it's because, well, obviously because of how bad it's gotten, but also because of social media has spread more awareness. And so, like, usually in the past, like, any protest would be mostly Arabs or Muslims, very rarely Arabs or non-Muslims. But nowadays, like, almost everybody's participating because they're finally seeing the truth.
Yeah. I think I read somewhere that there have been protests in every major city in the world since the war began, pro-Palestinian protests. And of course, here in Tampa, almost every weekend, a few of the ones you even attended. And I remember one time I asked you if you would be attending one particular protest downtown. And I asked for a reason. I'll tell you offline. So from my own line of my own point of view, these protests are definitely becoming more popular for several reasons. Social media is one, and some other reasons, which I'll tell you again offline. So it's good and bad, social media, disinformation, and of course, it's also bringing awareness to things that people wouldn't even see or hear about, not to mention now taking part. I have friends who are not Israeli or Palestinian, and they attended some of those protests, which they would never do as of this summer. If something were to happen in Middle East, and they wouldn't even hear about it. But since October 7, they were like, huh, this is actually not cool. Let's go show our support. And then they went and showed their support. And they're actually signing petitions and donating online. And some people's Instagram profiles see, think it's one of your friends on social media that has this thing, like a donation thing on her Instagram.
Maybe. A lot of people put like the...
Yeah, yeah. But I remember it was someone who was connected to you that I saw on their profile. And that's just another way to show support. So it's, yeah, I would definitely be keeping track of this one and just to see, hopefully all of this ends very soon, because it's just sad. Almost every hour, I listen to NPR news updates and there's something about Palestinians and the hospital, and they're even bombing mosques, because that is something I cannot wrap my head around. The place of worship.
They're bombing hospitals, like mosques, schools. They're even bombing like apartment buildings. Like they're permanently bombing everything. Churches. They've bombed churches.
Well, to not end this on a somber note, anything else planned for the rest of the year? I know you mentioned a trip coming up.
Yeah, I mean, I feel bad saying this considering what, but I am going to New York for Christmas and New Year's to visit my sister. So,
nice.
Yeah.
Would have a few family members around. My brother should be coming. My brother-in-law is here. My mom is here. So yeah, it's going to be a full house for Christmas. First time we're not traveling somewhere. So,
because of the baby.
Yep.
Hopefully everyone's out.
Yeah. So safe travels when you travel. It was nice chatting with you again, even though this is a much serious topic and just all around sad topic, but hopefully everything resolves very soon. Yeah, so
an episode is not enough for this. Like there's so much.
Yep. So thanks for coming on. It's again nice talking to you as always. Hope to talk to you soon.
Thank you.